Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts. Do you want to learn how to make your own Twitch channel, podcast, and outclass the competition? Well, the skills you learn at a creative degree in games, sound, film, or journalism will put you in a class of your own. Have a look at murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift, the show dedicated to indie games from around Australia and the world. My name is Mitch, and joining me tonight is my co-host Sarah. How are you going?
Good. How are you going, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm back on one of these. I haven't been on one of these like in forever. Yeah.
So you've been let back in.
I know. Yeah.
You're allowed to join us again. Fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm not just streaming Overwatch now. I'm actually doing one of these shows. Anyway,
you've had a promotion.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about me and Sarah taking my job. Tonight we have Ellie Bolson joining us in the studio to tell us more about her games, Brian Scene, Finvestigation, Personal Space, and What Lies Beneath. And she'll be taking all of those to XRWA this weekend. Thanks for joining us, Ellie.
No worries.
So we'll be talking about all those games of Ellie's creation later on this evening in the show. But first of all, Sarah, what are we talking about first?
So today we're going to be taking a closer look at G2A, the digital game key reseller service, and how they're in a bit of trouble with indie developers at the moment.
Great, let's get started.
Mitch, what's Discord?
Discord is an online chat service that most gamers use. Incidentally, you can also use it to talk to us at pixelsiv.com.au/discord.
Yeah, you can talk about episodes, you can talk about upcoming topics, you can probably even coerce Mitch into playing a game with you online.
That's not going to happen.
That is going to happen. You're doing it. I'm saying that's happening. Sorry.
Yeah, well...
Join Discord.
You should grow your beard back.
pixelsiv.com.au/discord.
Yeah, only Overwatch or Minecraft. That's... the only game
only Overwatch and Minecraft.
Yeah.
More importantly, though, recently, G2A, a service which resells game keys and codes, are in a bit of trouble with indie game developers. So the service has been accused of facilitating the sale of digital game keys that have been obtained through fraudulent ways, which include credit card fraud, influencer copies, and more. So what does this mean for companies that resell codes? And also, what does this mean for indie devs who supply those codes?
I think it's a good idea to, first of all, summarize exactly what G2A is for those of us that might not actually know what it actually does. So G2A is kind of like an eBay for game keys that you don't really want. If you have a copy of a game that you would like to just not have sit in your library for a while and you want to give it and you want to sell it to someone, G2A can facilitate that sale of that digital code or digital license for the game. So the problem with this is sometimes those codes are obtained by fraudulent manners. Sometimes they are promotion or content creator keys that aren't meant to be sold. And some of them are obtained via credit card fraud, which is they're purchased with a credit card, then sold on G2A. And as soon as they're sold, or even before they're sold, the credit card holder, the person that used the credit card, issues a chargeback and a refund. So that comes out of the developer's pocket, not G2A's. G2A has already made their money off the sale. What do you think of this, Ellie? Like, what comes to mind when this kind of thing comes up, whereas G2A is always, seems to, maybe every 6 months, someone's annoyed at G2A?
I think it says a lot when developers say, I'd rather you pirate my game than use this service. I think that's pretty bad. I think it's not great that developers don't get to choose whether their game is on this website. They should be able to say, I don't want it to be on there.
It does seem like there's a very big lack of regulation.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of developers really hold their IP as soon as it's out of their hands, like a Steam key, yeah, they have no control over it.
Yeah, that's it. Mm.
Currently, the big discussion is around quite a large, significant petition that's come from indie developers. So IGN AU posted an article on this, and they said that almost 4,000 people have signed a change.org petition asking G2A to stop selling indie games for its marketplace. The petition comes off the heels of a holiday weekend where G2A published a blog post attempting to defend itself against critics, which spurned indie devs to launch a new wave of criticism against the retailer, culminating in the online petition. And I believe they said only like 8% of their revenue comes from indie dev games. Right. So everyone was kind of saying, well, if you're not getting that much money off it, surely it's not a big deal if you just don't sell indie game keys on your platform. So naturally, that's kind of rolled into a very big kind of discussion that a lot of people are having over whether, you know, G2A is going to change their policy based on this petition.
It does seem like if they do, I think G2A is not budging, because if they say, okay, cool, we acknowledge that it's hurting indie devs, we won't sell them anymore. It's just acknowledging that, yes, there is a problem. And then as soon as the AAA developers are going to be annoyed as well, I think, as soon as they admit that there's a problem with their platform, and there quite obviously is one, and as soon as they admit that, then I think the whole facade kind of falls apart, doesn't it, Ellie?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, as a developer, have you heard of people actually being affected by this?
Only the ones that have posted on Twitter publicly about it. I think they raised an interesting point. It isn't just about the cashback affecting their money coming in; it's really mainly the time that they have to spend chasing down these illegitimate keys. Every time they get an email about it, they have to follow up and say, oh, okay, this person's key didn't work. I have to work out why. And I have to contact G2A and give them the key and the ID on that key so that G2A can look into it. So obviously that takes some time that they would be normally spending making more games.
Mm. Yeah, because indie dev developers don't have that manpower and resources.
Exactly. They can't afford it.
To deal with it. Every time G2A comes up, it's just one of those things that it just keeps getting better and better. Like, and there was also a small issue that cropped up yesterday or a couple of days ago, where a G2A was approaching publications, allegedly offering an article that they wrote that kind of defended and reassured the idea that this was not possible, that fraudulent keys cannot be sold on the G2A platform, and so the publications, and that came with a certain like monetary they were gonna pay people to run these articles
and not credit that it was written by somebody else, which is the interesting part,
and not credit. Yeah, so I mean, it just doesn't sit well with the whole narrative. It just seemed like they were like, I've seen Disney movie villains with more integrity than G2A at the moment. What do you think of that, Sarah?
Definitely. Oh, I just reading that, I just couldn't believe it. Just like, you know, we want you to publish this article, you know, allegedly, mind you, like, I don't know how true these claims are, you know, but it does kind of like put a bit of a more negative spin on G2A as far as, you know, how they might be trying to clean up the fallout of this. Now, I do believe there is no serious proof. I think they have denied, or they made a statement about the person that was trying to put out those articles. I think they said they were going to fire them, and they were like, this is absolutely not our company policy. But I do find the whole thing just screams, it's very shady. Like, whatever actually has happened and what's gone down, it definitely doesn't bode well, I think, for G2A's overall image of them trying to keep up this whole thing of like, well, it's not our fault that people are, you know, publishing fraudulent keys on our website or they're trying to sell them. We did actually pose the question to our community earlier today of do people think that sites like G2A and key resellers, do they need to be more regulation and rules around them? And we got a couple of really interesting responses. Lucas Gintoki on our Discord said that they think that the reselling of legitimate Steam keys is perfectly fine. But G2A is known for being a very illegitimate site with massive resales on stolen keys, and the company is, well, basically a POS. I don't know what that means, sorry.
But I do.
Well, you can tell me after the stream. I just figured it out. Anyway, yeah. And if you want to trade your keys, your choice, but only if it's legitimate. We also had two different people agree. I think Squint was talking about something needs to be done about poor DRM management. As we know with Steam, you know, you get given a key when you buy games through Steam, or you apply a Steam key to your account. But Squint is suggesting that potentially there could be a way to where the Steam key is never shown to you. It's automatically applied to your account. So taking out the possibility of someone just taking that key and putting it on another website for sale. And I believe someone else also had the same sentiment. Chaos Walsh on Facebook, who is a marketing person for Damsel, an Australian indie game that is very cool. They were saying that we get a lot of requests from shady people who claim to be famous YouTubers or have fake review websites with the intent of reselling keys. And they say a lot of vulnerable indie devs would probably fall for this. But potentially, they say that overhauling the Steam curator system or another method of directly applying games to an intended person's Steam account, much like what Squint was suggesting, would potentially help combat this. Do you think that might work to fix the overall problem? If instead of people being given a key on a slip of paper when they buy a game physically, or when you buy through certain retailers, instead of you getting a written key of letters and numbers, instead you have to actually attach your existing Steam account or whatever have you, and then it is automatically applied. Therefore, it kind of cuts out the possibility for groups like G2A to come in and be like, oh, we can profit off this. Do you think that would potentially fix a lot of these problems that people have with it?
I mean, it does take a little bit of the choice away from the consumer, and that inherently is, I think, a little bit of a bad thing. I think we need to find another way of doing it. Like if you just kind of take the key, I want to say physical key. It's not a physical key. It's a code. Yeah. And if you take that away from the consumer, it does severely limit what you can do with that key, because you can't really give it to someone, can you? Like and that kind of thing, consumers tend to not like.
Yeah, I think that would get complaints.
Yeah. Do you? What do you think the solution should be, Ellie? Do you think?
I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Somebody was saying, G2A, you know, a while ago they improved their authenticating of sellers, and they were like, it's all good now. It's all good. Developers can trust us. But all they did was say, oh, well, you have to have a phone number and social media, and you know, it was pretty easy stuff to just get a burner phone, and you know, like
the stuff that everyone has.
Yeah. A Facebook account. Like, how hard is it to make a Facebook account? An email address was the third thing. So it wasn't particularly hard, whereas like eBay actually requires you to match up your bank details and things like proof of your address. So it's quite thorough. I think it's interesting, the idea that
it does seem interesting that sites like eBay, who essentially do the same thing but with real goods, have a solution for this, and G2A can't just emulate security. Like I think security is just something that should be universally understood, and it's just not being addressed here.
I think that's the issue. It's not that G2A is trying things and it's not working. It's not that there aren't good ways to fix it or good ideas to try. Like, it's been done, like you said, eBay has done it to a reasonable extent. I think it's just that G2A doesn't seem to be able to admit that there is any problem. And they have said, you know, they allegedly wrote this article saying it is pretty much impossible to, you know, buy a fake. Well, okay, you know, you say that, but here we have all of the developers saying the opposite. And I don't think they would just lie. Like, what are they trying to get out of that? So I think if G2A was able to say, okay, we'll work with you more, but instead they're saying it's not our fault, you know, it must be yours.
Yeah, you,
and they even said, you know, yeah, like you must be giving out too many Steam keys, and it must be, you know, if they said if you don't keep watch of them, then they'll fall into the wrong hands. And it was a bit like, okay, way to blame the developers for that one.
So thank you for watching Pixel Sieved, your indie game interview podcast, live on Twitch. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about the G2A key reselling service and whether or not there should be more restrictions around what you can do with Steam keys. Now, I just thought I had an interesting quote from V. Pendergrass on Facebook. Big fan. She said, difficult to enforce because of the highly international nature of it all. I have very low opinion of code resellers generally. It's not beneficial for platforms, developers, or in the end, players. Ooh. Yeah. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I think that's a good take.
Yeah. and also, we got Matt on Discord saying the current system is like going to a garage sale and buying video games that were stolen from EB Games. And then the publisher, developer of that game is being held responsible for fines. Mm. Locking down the ability to resell keys isn't the answer, as that impacts on developers' ability to sell the games on other storefronts if they desire. What needs to happen for organizations like G2A is to get held accountable for selling stolen keys. Since they are not accountable right now, there is no motivation for them to prevent the system that encourages the sale of fraudulent keys.
Yeah.
That or Steam needs to stop allowing the resale of game codes purchased through Steam that were not at the request of the developer. Given how stringent the rules are about what a developer can do with the keys, it is strange that Steam doesn't care much about purchased copies being resold when they don't want them to be regifted to anyone. Hmm. So it's kind of like a do as I say, not as I do kind of thing.
I think he's hit the nail on the head with the accountability being the issue.
Mm.
It's always throwing it back at the developer when they're the one that's losing money.
Matt is also a developer based here in Perth. Yeah.
Yes.
We like him a lot. Anyway.
Squints just chucked something in the Twitch chat just quickly, which I think is a callback to the idea of like, you know, how eBay has a lot more buyer and seller protection associated with the platform because, you know, you have to put in your address, your credit card details and such. He said that you can give keys through Steam that aren't codes, which is absolutely true. And that very much works in the Steam closed platform. But he's saying potentially if accounts had to be trusted before being able to give keys, they would have to buy a stolen trusted account before buying with a stolen credit card. Adding that extra step would make it a lot harder, which I can definitely see potentially working. I think, you know, G2A potentially implementing more of eBay seller style protection onto their site to prevent this from happening would be good. But I don't know if that'll really happen because it feels like they'd rather just keep getting the profit you know, at no like cost to them because it comes onto the developers. But potentially that might be a better solution going into the future for other key resellers as well to avoid having more issues of fraudulent keys or stolen keys happening. Do you think that would be a potential like a better way for G2A to function?
I don't think G2A is likely to change, so I think anything else that we can think of would be...
I think G2A is listening. I think G2A can listen to our show and figure it out. Anyway, enough about G2A. Until they change, we won't cover them anymore. We will move on to our next topic.
So you're never covering them again?
No, never covering them again. Yeah, it's done. It's done unless they do something...
Until next week when they do something.
Until the CEO does something crazy. Anyway, next topic.
Hey, Mitch.
Yep.
You know, there is multiple ways that you can subscribe to PixelSift.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
You could subscribe on your podcast player of choice if you like audio-only versions.
Like Apple Podcasts or Pocket Casts?
Or even Google Play if you're in the US. Or you can jump on Twitch and you can give us a follow. Or on YouTube if you like the video versions.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know we were on so many things.
Yep, and you'll get a handy little notification as soon as there's a new episode for you to watch or listen to.
Wow, I'm going to do that right now.
I'm sure you will, Mitch, because you're a good boy.
So does Gianni come across really creepy in that promo?
Extremely creepy.
Yeah, he's like a little weird, right? Yeah.
We can talk to him about that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm sure he's listening.
Enough
about us. We're boring. We have Ellie Bolson in the studio right now with us, and she's here to talk about a couple of her games, but mainly Brine Scene Finvestigation, the adventure game. And so for those of us that may not know about Brine Scene, what is Brine Scene Finvestigation? And,
I'm sorry, the name is
I'll admit, when we're recording the promo for this episode, I got it wrong so many times. I had to reshoot it so many times. Anyway, enough about me. What's the game all about?
It's a point-and-click adventure
game. Heavily inspired by those games from the 90s, like Monkey Island. All of those sorts of LucasArts, Sierra, you know, King's Quest, that sort of thing. I very much enjoyed those as a child. And, yeah, I was trying to get into game dev work more and making some more games like I've enjoyed, like those sorts of ones that really got me as a kid. And I've been using a program called Adventure Game Studio, which is very user-friendly. So that was what I used to make the game. It's based on Aqua, used to be called Underwater World. I think all people who grew up in Perth have that sense of nostalgia about Aqua. going to see the dolphins when we were young, and then suddenly there weren't dolphins anymore. it was pretty grim, you know, reading about it now, about how the dolphins were poisoned. But as kids, I think we all just heard, oh, yeah, they're not there anymore. and you're not really told why. Or you don't think about, oh, somebody poisoned an animal. That's not cool. But, yeah, so I just made it the idea that somebody would not would have this conspiracy theory that the dolphins are not dead. They're still there. They're definitely still there, and I'm going to find them no matter what.
So tell me more about Adventure Game Studio. Mm. So it's you were speaking earlier, and you said it was quite an old tool set. Mm. What is it about Adventure Game Studio that drew you to it and in 2019?
Yeah. I think it was made in the late 80s, early 90s. I like the way it's modelled heavily around the LucasArts and Sierra games. So it's very visually based as well. You don't need as much coding to do what you need to do in it. So I think it's a bit easier as a starting point for a developer compared to, say, Unity or Unreal. I found it really user-friendly. As a primarily an artist, I thought it would be a really good tool to try out. Really enjoyed making a game, and I think I will have to go back.
So you're primarily an artist first,
yes.
Game developer, I guess interactive media a bit second. And we get all sorts of different developers on our show. How does that affect your creative process when you think about starting a project and creating a game?
It's a good question, because I feel like I come at it from the opposite angle to most game devs that I meet in Perth, at least. I feel like everyone else that I meet says, oh, I want to make this great game, this mechanic I've got in my mind, and I know exactly how it's going to work. The visual, I don't really mind. You know, it'll look one way or another, but it will, you know, it'll move this way or it'll do this when you press this button. Whereas I have the opposite experience. Every time I make a game, I have an exact picture in my mind of how it will look and feel. And it can't look any different. That's exactly how it has to look. And then how I do it and what program I use to make it is up to me and whatever mechanics. You know, if this mechanic doesn't work, if you can't click a button and have this happen, that's fine. You know, as long as it looks the right way.
When you mentioned that it can't look any different, there must be a point where compromise must be made.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
When you reach that point, how do you deal with it?
Well, I'm a perfectionist, so I tend to just spend longer working on the art till I'm very, very happy with it. But it can take a while, and it often gets to the point where I will work on, like I'm working on a game right now. I spent several weekends just doing art for it, because I just can't get started until I have enough art to work with. You know, I can't use placeholders. I don't like doing that. I have to have the finished product, because it has to feel the right way. But then I spent several weeks doing the art, and then it was like, oh, now I have to actually do the game.
Are you ever tempted to maybe stop at that
point? No, of course not. No, yeah. No, it has to be seen through.
Go on, Sarah.
Is that like the normal process for you as a primarily solo dev, I'm assuming?
Yeah, primarily solo. I think I have to get into the art first to really feel a passion for it, like to really feel I'm into the project. I tend to work on really small games, which is what my XRWA exhibit area is going to be focusing on. So Brian Scene for Investigation is, software. You can download it from my itch.io page. But then I've got four other small games that I made in Bitsy, which is an HTML-based, browser-based game developing tool. Definitely recommend Bitsy as well if somebody's not as programmer savvy. It's quite fun to use.
I like how there are all these tools now to kind of bridge the gap between people that aren't so good at programming and then people that aren't so good at art.
Yeah.
That's really great.
It's almost like the developers that are really doing something great, it's not necessarily people who are working on their passion projects. It's people who are helping others to work on theirs. It's people who are building tools. There's some really interesting, like Adam, the guy that made Bitsy, like he's always improving and always adding new stuff. And he used to just write games himself on his phone, you know, with, I'm not even sure what language, probably just HTML himself. But now he's made it so that people like me can make games in Bitsy in a couple of hours. It's very easy.
So thank you for watching Pixel Sift. If you've just joined us on one of our live platforms, we're talking to Ellie Bolson about her games, Brian Scene of Investigation, Personal Space, and What Lies Beneath. Sorry, I'm so embarrassed.
All good.
Every time that happened. So Brian Scene for Investigation is what we're talking about at the moment, but your other two games will be at XRWA this weekend. What's that been like, getting your titles prepared for that showcase?
Oh, very easy. Thankfully, the people at Play Out Perth have been very very accommodating. I would say Sophie has been very nice to work with. I basically just gave her my laptop with the games on it. But yeah, the Bitsy games are very easy. You know, they were all done. They're just HTML files. So I just put a copy of them on the computer and it's done.
Must say XRWA is the interactive VR festival running in conjunction with Revelations Film Festival this weekend in Perth, which Ellie will be showcasing her games at.
Yes, it's very exciting.
So you're also a regular exhibitor at the Potluck Collective.
Mm-hmm.
What does that organization mean to you, and how does that affect your creativity at all?
Yeah, I would say it spurs me on. Most of my games, including Brian Sint and Personal Space, were made for Potluck. It's a really good way to make a small contained game with a specific theme. So a lot of the time, especially being able to create visuals and not being as sure about the mechanics that I'll use, just because I'm not as good of a programmer as others, the possibilities are overwhelming. There's too much of an option, the paradox of choice. But then with Potluck, it's like, oh, the theme is this. So Personal Space, the theme of that Potluck was space. So I made that. And I was thinking, oh, I'm going to make this really dramatic game. It's going to be really narrative heavy. And in the end, I made it pretty light. But yeah, people have told me they enjoyed it, which is really nice. Like, I don't expect it to be as popular as it is. And then you go to a potluck and you go, oh my God, somebody's actually playing the game I made. That's nice.
Probably should have gone into it before I asked that first question. Yep. But what is the Potluck Collective? And can you summarize it for me?
Yeah, so Colton, Bob and Sophie run it, and it's about every 2 months. It's a feast for the senses. the way I always put it to friends, because they hear potluck and they think food, is everyone comes and they bring their video games and art for other people to taste. So it's a bit of a tasting plate of all of your different creative media. There is not usually food.
See, as a podcast creator, I bring food.
Okay. Yeah. I like to bring a bit of food, but it just goes, you know.
With events like XRWA, obviously it's like it's a major thing to have it come to WA and to have like the opportunity to integrate games with film alongside. What does events like this mean to you as a Perth-based developer?
It's an opportunity, definitely. Not just for people to see my work, but for me to see other people's work. Yeah. Especially with VR, it's so, you know, exciting for someone like me who doesn't do 3D. Is more into the 2D space. It's really interesting, the possibilities of that.
Is there anything that you've seen coming up at XR that you would like to check out?
Mostly I just want to play Hien's games again.
I mean, who doesn't want to play Hien's games?
Yeah. It's like a warm hug in a game.
Yeah. So we've just about run out of time. Before we go, where can people find your work, Ellie?
So I have an itch page and I have a Twitter and they are both the same. It is Video Bames, which is like video games, but with these.
You're just trying to make things that are difficult for presenters to pronounce.
No, Video Bames is easy to say. Just imagine it's that B emoji.
Yeah.
That's what it was based on, basically.
And you also have one of the greatest Instagram handles I think I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah, Shrekstagrammer.
Yeah, nice.
That's a long story I won't go into. But yeah, the videobames.itch.io or videobames.twitter.com.
Excellent. And all your work is there?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, everything's up on
And
itch.
You'll also be at XRWA this weekend?
Yes, I will be there on the weekend.
Cool. All right, well, thank you for joining us for another episode of Pixel Sift, and thank you very much for joining me tonight, Ellie.
Thank you.
And talking to us about Brian's investigation. I almost did it again, and yep. As well as other games you'll be taking to XRWA this weekend. Mm-hmm. So this episode was hosted by myself and Sarah. Thank you for joining me tonight, Sarah.
No, thank you for having me tonight, Mitch. Thank you for taking my space back.
Yeah. Okay, you can go now. All right.
Oh, wow.
And this Pixel Sieve is produced by Scott Quigg, Sarah Ireland, Fiona Bartholomeus, Mitch Lowe, and Gianni Di Giovanni, and is our executive producer. And we wouldn't be able to make it to 126 episodes of Pixel Sift if we didn't have the support of Murdoch University. So go check them out and tell them we sent you. And if you're keen to learn more about a great creative degree, head to murdoch.edu/arts.
meetup.edu.au/arts.
There you go. Cool.
This is why you didn't have your job.
Yeah. This is why Sarah will be back next week.
Absolutely.
As always, we'll be sticking the links to the topics that we talked about on the show in the show notes of our website, pixelsiv.com, www.pixelsiv.com.au. Sarah, where can people go to get more Pixel Sift?
Well, you should absolutely join our Discord for starters, because we would love to have you there. We post regular updates about what we're doing, when the episodes are happening, maybe if Mitch is going to play Overwatch and you can join him.
Yep.
Maybe. So that is pixelsift.com.au/discord, where you can also share your creative work. You can talk about the current topics, games, anything else you want. Just come join us. Have fun on Discord.
Share
that
your
is
work.
Pixelsift. Share your work. We share your food, share your everything, share your life. That's pixelsift.com.au/discord. And as well, if you like what we do, please tell a friend, because we don't pay to advertise. We rely purely on word of mouth for people to find the show. So definitely just put the podcast on your friend's phone, put it on your mum's computer, just put it on your cousin's tablet. Just spread the good word of PixelSift.
Like a U2 album.
Yep. Exactly. And our
like,
next
comment and subscribe.
Okay, thank you very much.
All smash right. That like button.
All right, you all get one. All right. Next episode will be on the 25th of July, so you can join us this time next week, though, for Pixelsiv Plays, where we play some Aussie indie games that we feature on our show. That's all for this week. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.